I was gonna call you Gerald. That's yeah.
Can your Gerald. Name be Gerald Dean Ferrara?
Ah, that's my drag name. It's my male to male drag persona, Gerald D. Ferrara.
Male to male drag.
Hey, Will. We know.
I didn't know if you knew the name. But what I am doing in my life is male to male drag, as long as we're clear. Okay, let's start this fucking.
It's crypto drag. You just never know when he's in drag.
Alright, let's set this bitch off.
Welcome to the Inside Jacket Pocket Podcast.
Wait, start that off again.
Start it over. It was too soon.
Wait, okay. Hold on. Okay.
Breathe and then
three, two, male to male.
Welcome to the Inside Jacket Pocket Podcast, the first time men have ever discussed anything together on the internet. I'm Dave McGee, unemployed playwright. With me, Owen O'Malley, underemployed bassist.
Howdy.
Will, weekend newspaper pitchman.
That's what I do.
And Gerald.
It's pronounced Yettled.
Gerald.
We have a defensive opinion on how your name is pronounced.
I think that's appropriate.
What's the origin of the name?
Dutch. Portuguese?
Can you use it as a sentence?
Dutchiguese.
All right.
I was on this podcast. Use it in a sentence. Use it in a sentence. I was on this podcast and Yettled kicked my ass.
So I wanted to kick things off today talking about the internet.
Oh.
Yeah, I know, right?
Because what is this thing we're talking about?
Okay, so this is a series of tubes. So there are a couple of things that I avoid entirely on the internet. One as a matter of mental health, and the other as a matter of mental health in a completely different way. Mm-hmm. The first is, I do not allow myself to read anything. Let me underline this. Anything. Let me then capitalize it, underline it, bold it, italicize it. Anything about medicine or health on the internet, because I am a crippling hypochondriac, and anything I read about, I immediately have.
Uh-huh.
The other thing is discussions about feminism, because I immediately get very angry that not everyone understands that feminism is a necessary, important thing, and I'm not even going to talk about it. I get very frustrated reading men's rights advocates writing online. It makes me really, really, really twitchy and screamy.
Those things.
But what
exist.
About a White Pride Month?
Yeah, thank you. Exactly, but that with feminism. So I was kind of wondering, I wanted to put it out there, is there anything just sort of off the cuff that, or off the bat, that you totally avoid reading about on the internet?
Kitty porn. I just want to put that out there.
See, Owen O'Malley does not like kitty porn.
When you say it...
No, I just say I avoid it.
Jesus Christ.
But you know, it's like that. It's like the thing that, what was it, David Foster Wallace says, and I think it's the essay about language, where he says it's sort of like putting at the bottom of an advertisement of your services for a babysitter, not a pederast or whatever. It's like, even bringing it up makes it seem like why are you bringing it up at this point?
I'll tell you one thing I've never done: kill a homeless man.
But Owen, is there anything that you typically or strenuously try to avoid on the internet?
There are things that I should avoid. I have a problem not engaging in political and philosophical discourse with fucking idiots.
I've done that with you before.
Even when I know that I should step away from it, I can't seem to disengage. I think the most recent thing I've avoided on the internet, and I think this counts as something under the rubric of on the internet because I don't have a TV, but I didn't watch the first presidential debate at all. And I had no desire to watch it, and hearing about it after the fact, I'm especially glad I didn't watch it.
Yes, you are.
Yeah, it's funny. I remember, you know, in our respective youths, you know, watching who was it, John Edwards and
Dick Cheney.
That one. You know, debating and thinking it was the most fun sporting thing ever. And now those things just make me feel sad. So
yeah.
I echo Dave your comment about avoiding anything medical on the internet. I too suffer from crippling hypochondria, but also of a fear of the medical industrial complex. And so what I get coupled with my medical research on the internet is also research into which herbs and homeopathic remedies will soothe what I have going on. Jesus. Which, I mean, we're in my apartment right now. We can look in that cupboard and there is like, there's a forest of plants in there that many, many disparate cultures have put together to say, yeah, that'll really soothe your rheumatism or whatever. I was in Spain this summer and parlez-vous, and I hurt my knee and I started Googling what the hell was wrong with me because I was really scared to go to a Spanish hospital. And WebMD told me that WebMD told me that I had obesity, and that was that was why my knee hurt. So yeah,
Gerald, you gotta lay off the sweets.
Yeah, man. Being a 30-year-old 6'2" man who weighs like a 140. You know.
I kind of, I mean, you know, with at least social media, I very rarely talk about politics or religion because it's really no one else's goddamn business. And I will read, even when I'm yelling at people because a lot of people are idiots, if they're posting about politicians or religion or what have you, I will read so I can then do a little more research if it's something that I want to research. But I very rarely post my own sort of thoughts about that because I don't really understand the point because a lot of people are very uninformed. In terms of medicine, I have WebMD'd myself, and every single time AIDS.
You looked up Will on WebMD.
Yes, I did. But every single time, it's sort of like...
Did it say Will suffers from excessive hair and extreme handsomeness?
No, it said symptoms may include handsomeness, hair in places you've never had hair before.
Volume problems.
Modulation issues.
Volume modulation issues and uncanny charm. A bewitching charm.
I'm concerned about my bewitching charm.
Yeah, I put that in, and it said it asked me if I was Will Petrie.
Is there an ointment for that? They put a. Is it a topical ointment that they put on that?
It's a cream. A creme. It's a creme. It's a French cream that I call a creme.
It has an accent grave.
Did it come out of an éclair?
Yeah. You sort of take an éclair, you eat it, you sit back, and you feel better.
It pairs nicely with a Blanc de Blanc.
A Blanc de Blanc is a sparkling Blanc de Blanc is highly recommended with that.
Two to three ice cubes and call me in the morning.
Yeah.
Before we move back into the political discussion, Will, seriously, is there anything you avoid reading about on the internet?
Yeah. Did you hear all that stuff I said about like the politics and the religion?
And you just don't engage at all.
Okay. Well, is there anything that I avoid? No, I don't often care for my peers' opinions about politics and religion because they're uninformed. I do find myself reading about, you know, reading what my friends think about these things only so then I can be like, okay, this person is a moron. Let me try to disprove them. But I'll never confront them with knowledge that would make them think twice because I feel like people actually don't want to listen. They just want to surround themselves with people who reinforce their positions in the first place.
Wouldn't you then be a good person to talk about if you're not planning to reinforce it? Wouldn't you be a nice sort of a nice creme for their
I don't think that's what people
insular
want.
Insular nature.
I honestly believe that's not what people want. I think when people get onto Twitter or Facebook or whatever the hell you call it, they're actually Friendster, MySpace. What is this, 1995? I think people are actually...
Prodigy.net.
There it is. I think people are actually just shouting into a void. And they actually... I don't think people really want to have... Most people, I don't think, really want to have conversation. I think they want people to like what they say. They want people to say, right on, sister, no matter your gender. I think that's what people want. I don't think people want an actual debate. And I'm actually not really interested in debating with them unless they're like a very close friend of mine. Like Dave and I have very different thoughts on politics. And in the car across the country, I was actually very excited to sort of talk about it. And I think we agree to disagree, but we see where the other one is coming from. That's a conversation I enjoy having, but that's very, very rare.
Because it's
especially on the internet, it's
in
rare.
Person.
Exactly. Because it's one-on-one, because it's not on the internet. But in terms of, like, you know, going back to your question, is there anything I avoid on the internet? No, I mean, there are things that I'm not particularly interested in, like child pornography, but I wouldn't say I avoid.
Yeah, okay.
Jesus, doesn't that go without saying? Why are we clarifying this?
I do not shop for wives on the internet. I just want to let you guys know.
Yeah, I'm also not interested in, like, you know, human trafficking. Like, you know, obviously, like...
We just got listed on iTunes, guys. Come on now.
I'm sorry. No, but you're asking if there are things that I avoid. I don't think there are things to be avoided. I think there are certain topics that draw my eye, but I do not shy away from topics unless we've mentioned them before, and I will not mention them again because we are now on iTunes and we are.
Are
legit.
Are you guys able to read about health on the internet and not freak out forever?
Yeah,
what happened when you WebMD'd yourself, Will?
Okay, AIDS. I had AIDS. It was a symptom of AIDS. No, I don't. I don't have that. But like, I had like a rash under my armpit that was really sore, and I looked it up, and like the first thing it said is like, this could be a symptom of HIV. And of course I panic and I think about like every bad mistake and every drunken night I've ever had. It wasn't. It was something. I put a salve on it. I happened to be in France, actually. It was not an eclair. I did buy a salve. And it cleared right up. But like, WebMD, we're not doctors. We're actually not doctors. There's no point
Speak
in doing that.
Speak for yourself.
I'm sorry, Dr. Gerald. Three out of the four of us are not doctors.
Right, sister.
Thank you. That's exactly what I wanted.
So how's your mouth?
My mouth? Oh, I got stung by a bee on my mouth this morning.
What were
Did
you
WebMD
doing with
that
the
shit?
Well, I'm a purist. I was trying to get honey right from the bee's dick. The best honey is right at the tip of a bee's penis. So I was trying to suck it out, and that fucker stung me right on my lip.
That's Will. That's your autobiography. I was trying to suck it out, and that stuck me right on my lip.
It's the only honey that does not cloud. All the other honeys cloud. This one is pure. It keeps on your shelf, is what I'm saying. No, I was at fucking. I was at freaking. I'm sorry. This is iTunes. I don't know if I can swear. I was at a boot camp this morning, and I was running a lap.
Wait, what?
I go to a fitness boot camp here in Los Angeles. Listen. I'm a barely employed actor. I have a lot of unstructured time. I wake up early with a bunch of other morons, and we exert ourselves in Griffith Park, Los Angeles. And apparently,
legal?
There's a bee problem. Is that legal? Yeah, I pay some money. I sign a waiver. Is that what you're talking about?
It says if you get stung by a bee on your mouth, it's not our fault.
It's not your fault. No, but like you do have to sign that. Like if you like. Get hurt or die, you can't sue us.
Can we just pause your topic for a second and talk about what we all thought when we heard that Will was stung on the mouth by a bee this morning?
Sure. So
my thing initially when you wrote that, I said he was drinking a really delicious Sprite and just didn't notice that the bee was on the rim of the can, and he took it to the head and he was like, this Sprite is so good, I'm going to fight through the bee sting.
Uh-huh.
My assumption was that a bee was on your arm and that your first impulse was to suck out the poison.
But it hadn't stung me on the arm yet.
No, it hadn't. But you were kind of like being preemptive about it.
Proactive poison suck?
Yeah, it was just making me think of you dashing from the van to save somebody.
I'm a hero.
I thought that you were trying to make out with a bee.
That's not what you actually thought.
I thought that you were attempting to you know, get to second base with a bee.
Well, Dave, you're a moron. No, what I was doing, what I think happened was, I was speaking. You know, this was it stung me as I was about to run my final lap. I was using some rubber bands for like some bicep and tricep exercises. I'm pretty buff right now, but I was talking,
it's
and I think
of the boot camp.
I was talking, and I think the bee was attracted to my sweet words, and so it went directly into my mouth.
It was a learned bee.
Your delicious tongue.
My delicious tongue. It wanted a taste of my delicious tongue. It really sucked. And then I went back and like I just started the second lap. And I went back and I was holding my mouth and everyone's like, what's wrong? I was like, I got stung on the mouth by a bee, I think. I haven't been stung by a bee since I was 10. And the guy's like, you're not going to believe this, but you're the third person this month to have been stung on the mouth by a bee in that park. You would think maybe fucking change locations or something, right?
Do you think it's just one bee that's been serial stinging for 3 months in that park?
Oh, probably.
That's actually not... when bees sting you, their stinger falls out and then they die.
Thanks for suspending disbelief, Johnny Literal.
Listen, guys.
No, I did. I had to pull the stinger out of my lip.
Yo, you know, I saw a photograph this summer where I had always heard that too, that the stinger falls out. I knew that the stinger came off, but I never considered the mechanism by which that was possible. And then I saw a photograph of a bee flying away with its intestines strung out between its flying away part and the stinger part. And I'm like, oh, right, that's why it dies. It actually vivisects itself flying away.
Yeah. Crazy jihad shit.
I'm saying he got a nice final taste, is what I'm saying. He died happy, is what I'm thinking.
Will, did you look like Lana Del Rey for most of the day?
It looks like I had like a fourth of a collagen implant. If I go back three more times, I'm gonna look like a real housewife.
Like you got a collagen Groupon and they wouldn't give you the whole thing.
Like I'm walking to the car kind of like all shaky with like this thing up against my lip, but I'm like, always trust your surgeon. Know who your surgeon is. Now that was DMX, if you wanted to know who that was. That was okay. DMX.
It's DMX post collagen?
Yeah, post collagen.
So I feel like along with child pornography and shopping for wives, the other thing that we all know without saying that we avoid the internet is comments on YouTube.
Oh, sure.
Which are a cesspool of just, well, really racism, just immediately, no matter what's going on.
Yeah, yeah.
And I do tend to try my best not to get involved in discussions with people who are...
And 12, Will, you'll probably think 12 years old, 12. They're all 12, by the way. They're all 12 years old.
Sure.
You'd want to think that they're 12.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's... I quote frequently the XKCD comic that's, you know, somebody staying up all night because somebody is wrong on the internet, right, that we all know. But, yeah. I do sometimes get sucked in, not to YouTube comments, but to discussions with people that I shouldn't be in discussions with. Most recently when Owen and I got in an argument with somebody else on his Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. What happened there? Should we have engaged with somebody who was either clearly trolling or was actually just that uninformed?
You got to remind me, which one was this?
This is the discussion we had with somebody who was saying that it was the law was recently passed in Illinois saying that pharmacists could refuse to sell Plan B based on their religious thoughts, and somebody who was saying that the government telling licensed pharmacists that they had to dispense medication to people who wanted it was akin to the government intruding on affairs of a church.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so the only good thing that came out of that, I don't know, well, okay, the only thing that I look back on that conversation and I read, you know, that person's posts and they self-identify as a Federalist with fascist leanings. So, you know, at least, like, that person was exposed for who they are. And you can't... It's so hard to... I don't even have words for this.
Well, it's pretty scary when somebody self-identifies as having fascist leanings.
But at least you're like, you know, in a sort of like, you know, Socratic dialogue sort of lens, like at least everybody else who is looking at that conversation is like, oh, that guy is crazy. And like all the things that he espouses have to be now couched within this identification. And maybe that itself is ad hominem, but I mean... Dude's like, he's crazy.
So here's my thing with that. Like, so I typically don't engage in those things. I typically see those things and keep it moving. I mean, I don't really mess with Facebook like that. But like in general, when I see those things, I keep it moving and don't engage. Because that thing that you're describing, that return on investment, is not worth it for me from a value proposition perspective. Yeah. So like I could engage emotionally. I'm going to get all like... torn up over it. I'm gonna get like heated. I'm gonna, you know, my earlobes are gonna turn red. My heart rate is gonna increase. And I'm like, for me, exposing someone else as crazy is not worth it. Like, the fact that he's arguing about Plan B in Illinois on Facebook is like that. I mean, okay, you lost. Like, so that's
I mean, but most people don't. I don't know. I think that I still think that there is some worth. My thing is, I need to learn to disengage once they've revealed themselves as being crazy, because
Then you just get to diminishing returns, and you're just like, see, he's crazy.
Sure, and that's kind of like, you know, that's sort of been the MO of my relationship history also. But once you... Sorry.
Jeez, downer.
Hey, Will, so what happened with that bee?
But I do think it's important. I think that if someone just makes, like... If somebody proffers something that, you know, on its face seems to have some kind of internal logic that you... but you vehemently disagree with it, I think it's worth at least exposing that person for who they are. I think it's important to contextualize, especially in the, you know, land of anonymity that is the internet. Like, it's worth the effort to at least expose the identity of that person and the sort of, you know, philosophical epistemology of that person, just so there's some kind of context for the crazy shit that they say.
I'm going to just... chime in here. I think this entire conversation is resting on the understanding that people want to engage in conversation, and I think that the majority of the time people don't. So, you know, in talking about these sort of things, I don't think people go onto these platforms to talk about something and also be open to be proven wrong. So I kind of feel like talking about these things on the internet is kind of a big waste of time, to be perfectly honest.
I'm gonna, but the thing, and you might be right, but the thing that I still hang on to that I can't let go of is, I've had many of these conversations, but I had a different conversation about people posting. On the anniversary of September 11th, people posting pictures of airplanes flying into buildings.
Oh, God.
And I said, you know, I just posted some comment that said, like, you know, to all my friends who didn't do that, thank you. And that then led into this long, ridiculous back and forth with this, you know, guy from my past who I'm friends with on Facebook, and I don't remember when or why I friended him, but... And I didn't convince him of anything. And I knew that I was not going to convince him of anything because, honestly, I've been in ridiculous Facebook arguments with this particular person in the past. But other people commented on the thread, specifically calling out certain things that I said, saying, thank you for saying this. Or, I mean, that it sounds petty, but I do think that other people... especially when you get like a long comment thread, because of the way that Facebook's like news feed algorithm works, it'll promote those actively engaged threads to the heads of other people's news feeds, and people will see them, and if people want to read them, they'll read through them.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, I'm sort of wondering about your idea that people aren't actually interested in engaging in conversation, and I'm wondering if you're being uncharitable or if I'm being too forgiving.
It's possible both. I will say that I have wrestled with my relationship with social media in the past. I have pulled away from it because I didn't really know exactly what I needed from it. I have been lured sort of back into it because with Facebook and these other programs, they actually are really great ways to stay connected to people with whom you normally wouldn't be talking to, especially in a entertainment industry. It's a very easy way, like, you know, people don't know people's emails, but people only have one Facebook page. It is a really good way to sort of make those connections. Beyond that, I don't and besides a really cute animal picture, like a really fucking cute cat. Besides that, I, you know, and sharing that and wanting to see that. Besides that, I have no interest in social media. So that's sort of my relationship to it. There are people inside Jacket Pocket who do talk about politics, who do talk about these things, and I think that's great. I don't judge that. But for me, the only thing that's going to do is maybe inspire, if that's something I'm interested in, it'll maybe inspire some independent research on my end. I don't think that people join these things with an open heart, with an open mind to talk about perhaps sensitive topics And I don't think people are willing to admit when they're wrong or admit that they are not as well researched as they say they are. And for those reasons, I just don't see any point. Even like if I see something that's completely fucked up. Okay, so the one time where I'm gonna eat my hat is when I did watch a part of that ridiculous debate between Romney and Obama, and Romney was saying that Obama's investment in green energy was a waste of time. It was like, you know, you've spent all this money, like, you know, that is not a way to like a safe energy plant. And that's insane, because what he was talking about is like drilling up Alaska and getting a pipeline down here and like investing in coal. So that was the one thing that was like, how can you say this, and we're just hearing this as sound bites that are great. That's the one time that I went on Facebook and talked about something political. Again, I'm not really interested I wasn't interested in that moment to have someone be like, well, what he meant was this. I was just actually venting. And I think that's what people do. I think people vent.
So I'm going to argue that you are being uncharitable. I actually can point out. So I want to give a shout out to my favorite spot on the internet, which is Metafilter, where I feel like it's the highest quality discussion that one can find on the internet, because it's
next to Inside Jacket Pocket.
True.
Holler.
Well moderated, and people, I have seen opinions change, but in a more insular sense here, I feel like I actually saw a Facebook thread change Owen's mind about something. Owen posted something about the USPS, or the Postal Service being in default, and said, you know, why do we even need the U.S. Postal Service? And in a series of responses, I feel like, am I misquoting you? I feel like your opinion was actually reversed by these.
No, you're totally true. I mean, to be fair, like I did pose it as a question. I didn't pose it as an assertion of like, let's shut this fucker down. I was like, why don't we shut this down? And it was kind of posed as sort of like a people please inform me.
Yeah.
But I was, I mean, I think the question sort of like betrayed the fact that I was leaning towards like, you know, if, you know, I need a reason to think that it shouldn't be shut down. And I was given lots.
Well, yeah. I mean, Dave, what I would say is that Owen is a good friend of yours. We're all sort of involved in this project in particular. I think that he is an exception, especially in terms of how the two of you relate and sort of pass information on. Why did that have to be on Facebook? I'm not like judging. I'm not saying like, you know, you shouldn't have like brought it up on there, but like it actually didn't be like, you could have just had a conversation because you guys are friends and you guys do talk.
The feedback I got was not from Dave.
But like that's like an exceptional relationship. That's a very good relationship.
But I actually didn't participate in that thread at all, Will.
I'm sorry?
I didn't participate in that thread at all. I actually
didn't. Okay. But what I'm saying
is it was from a bunch of people, a lot of people that I haven't even like talked to in like a long time responded to that thread and had trenchant things to say. It was persuasive.
Well, that's great. And you walking onto Facebook, you logging onto Facebook with that question and that ability to be like, I don't, you know, I have no idea what is the point. You know, what is the point of having BBS is great, but that I think that you are in the vast minority.
Yeah, probably.
And I agree with that.
I think fundamentally, Will, I kind of agree with you. I think fundamentally that most people, not people on Facebook, not people on the internet, most people don't have that level of care or thought with what they say. I think what you see in the world is that people have opinions, and with social media, with the internet, are seeking a platform to you know, promote their viewpoints. Mm-hmm. It's more to me about people in general being open-minded and being, you know, mature and intelligent in discussion enough such that their opinion can be changed, more so than it is a function of media or it's not so much the medium but the attitude of the people. And I see that, you know, regardless. I think, you know, you could, whether it's a guy standing on a corner with a sandwich board on, or whether it's a guy on Facebook, I think it's more a human thing than it is a medium thing. And, you know, so I generally agree, but I take it one step further and say it's people. It's not, you know, people on the internet.
Sure. And Dave did mention Metafilter, and, you know, Dave kind of walked, he logged on and kind of showed me what that was about. And that actually does seem to be a platform which is unlike Facebook, which is unlike the comment section of YouTube, where people are engaging in a conversation in a thoughtful, polite way. I just don't think you're going to find that sort of thing as often on Facebook or as often on, you know, via Twitter wars or what have you.
But your point and Gerald's point is that that's because people are dumb, not because the medium is bad.
People are dumb, and the social media is a way of connecting people. So in a way, social media is connecting a lot of fucking dumb people. So what's the point of engaging in these conversations if you want to have thoughtful and engaging conversations when, like, that when the vast majority of people, because they are people, are fucking idiots? What's
and
the
I think,
point?
I think that's a good point. So, like, you know, you've got Facebook. So my Facebook account is not under my real name. You know, like I've posted on it maybe like twice, and I've said stupid things on it, and it's because of that shield of anonymity. I think Metafilter is actually an exception because people are invested insofar as they have to pay a nominal fee to join. And, you know, you don't get just idiots who just want to get a rise out of somebody and then keep it moving. And so I see that. And so I think there are pockets of the internet that are that where you can find thoughtful conversation, whether you have that relationship with an individual, whether you have a particularly open-minded person, or whether you have a forum that's designed to facilitate good discussion because people are bought in and invested to a certain extent.
Absolutely. And Facebook, the idea of, like, friending someone, the fact that, like, friend is now a verb, you can friend someone, these people oftentimes are not your friends. No, I mean, let's be honest, like, you know, like, I'm like, I'm on Facebook, and I'm on Facebook, and people are friending me, and I'm like,
boys aren't your friends. They're bad boys. They're not your friends.
When I'm on Facebook, and I sometimes look at the millions of requests that are sent to me, look at them and I say, okay, what, but honestly, like, you know, I look at some of these and I'm like, I maybe met this person at a party once. And is this, like, maybe an important business connection? Is this maybe someone that I want to sleep with? Is this someone, like, is this a relationship or friendship that I want to further? Or do you just sort of hit click because we met once and that's what it is? I mean, these are the people that are sort of being involved in your world, and they have the ability to sort of engage in conversations that perhaps you don't really care for their opinion.
I agree. I don't like internet.
I think the internet. I mean, it's both things. It's that the medium definitely does affect the discourse.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let me just summarize this point with something that Will said just mere moments ago, which is people are fucking idiots, so what's the point? With that being said, Owen, you want to discuss something about quotations.
That was a pivot right there. I'm not one for espousing quotations usually, because usually they're sort of ill attributed.
Mark Twain said that.
I thought that was Socrates, actually.
So he was quoting Socrates. Yeah.
There are a few quotations. There's actually one in particular that has sort of, like, stuck with me for my life as sort of the watchwords that I strive to live by, although I consistently fall short. But so I want you guys first to think of, you know, are there any quotes that have sort of stuck with you or informed your, you know, your worldview or your view of yourself, and whether or not you've been able to sort of live up to the words that you champion. But for me, there's this quote that's been alternately, I've seen it attributed to both Chuck Close and Stephen King, and the quote is, "Amateurs wait for inspiration and the rest of us just go to work." And that's definitely as someone who's been attempting to turn, this is going to sound harsh, but a hobby into a career as a creative, I've always sort of intellectually understood the value in simply blocking out time to be creative.
Mm-hmm.
But I've rarely been through periods of my life where I actually, you know, embody that ideal. I think that It's only recently that I've been able to start really blocking off, like, office hours for myself, and definitely being unemployed helps.
Sure, for sure.
Yeah, and but also, you know, surrounding yourself with other sort of disciplined creatives who are doing the same thing is an inspirational thing. So finally, for the first time in my life, I've started embodying this ideal. But this is, I heard this quote from my mom, who is an art teacher and artist, and I heard that from her over a decade ago, and it's taken this long for me to actually start living up to this quote, which, I mean, has resonated with me throughout my theater school career, throughout, you know, trying to be a creative musician, being in a bunch of different bands, trying to create original work. Yeah, and it's taken a long time for me to actually achieve that, and not that I've achieved it. You know, I think it's a constant, it's a daily struggle kind of
sure.
thing.
But, sure.
But the fact that I, but the quote, the value of the quote itself has never diminished in my mind. I think it's, to whomever it's rightfully attributed, it's potent idea, and I think it's a valuable idea. So, yeah, I don't know if you guys want to sort of, you know, react to that quote, or if you guys also had quotes that sort of stuck with you in a formative age and have sort of, again, I don't know, informed your life since you've heard them.
There is sort of a, I don't know if you guys, you probably have heard of these TED Talks, you know, what is it, technology, entertainment, yeah. design, you guys have heard of these things?
Yes.
Yeah.
A bunch of fucking geniuses are all in a room, right, and they get like 18 minutes to speak, and my first introduction to TED was actually that woman who wrote that book that every single mom read called Eat, Pray, Love. What's that woman's name? Elizabeth.
50 Shades of Grey?
No. Eat, Pray, Love.
Elizabeth Gilbert?
Elizabeth. Yeah, exactly. And right? I had never read the book, but it was trending. It was on Facebook or something. And I was like, oh.
Then hashtag.
Hashtag, whatever. I'll read this.
And you were and like, people are stupid on Facebook, so why should I read that?
No, I did not engage in a conversation with these idiots. What I did was I investigated further. Thank you, Geralt. So I don't know if you have you guys heard her speech is somewhat popular. It's
yeah, I watched it.
You watch it. So like for those of you who haven't, all of our many listeners, in this speech, she sort of talks about she had just written Eat, Pray, Love, and she's about to write a release a second book, and she was very, very nervous, and people were saying, aren't you afraid that you're never going to live up to the success of your former book? And she was like, yeah. She was trying to figure out ways to deal with that sort of pressure, and it's a very good speech. I recommend people go and watch it, but you know, she does talk about whatever that inspiration is, and that's like a very tricky sort of spirit that lives in the walls of your studio, and it can show up or it can kind of like just chill out. But at the end of the day, you have to show up and you have to go to work. So, you know, she talks about like, you know, if the spirit of genius comes in and her inspiration comes in as she's writing and makes her work amazing, then great. But she's going to show up and do her job anyway, and she's not going to, you know... she's not going to feel like the pressure of being a genius is going to make her work collapse. There was something in that of like, you know, I'm a creative type and I should at least just show up and do my job that I kind of liked. And that's what your quote kind of reminded me of.
Yeah, so most of the quotes that I've, lived my life by and things that have inspired me as a younger person into adult life come from the most poignant of hip hop songs. Capadonna, I love you like I love my dick size. Tupac, I ain't no killer, but don't push me. Revenge is like the sweetest joy next to getting pussy. Things
Jesus.
Like that.
Jesus. Jesus Christ. What about showing up and doing your job? What about creativity and nah. bringing
That's only half
bringing
your job is only half your life, Will.
Right. No, oh. but okay. the one that really sticks to me is it's a quote. I actually tried to look it up years ago, and it's attributed to someone named Corey Lyles, who I don't know who the person is, but it's sampled in this song by this rapper named Freddie Fox. And I am not now what I was yesterday, and I am not now what I shall be tomorrow. So you do yourself an injustice to judge me by yesterday when I have moved on. I think I heard it when I was, maybe like 18, 19. at a real nexus point in my life. And so it sort of just kind of reminds me of the need and the importance of like individual growth, personal evolution, things like that, to always sort of get better than I was yesterday. Because looking back, there's a lot of like a lot of my adolescence and pre-adolescence is like a lot of embarrassing shit that I did when I was a kid, and I could let that cripple me and I could let that define me, but I'm not that, you know what I mean? Like I have people around me that love me and that want me to be better and push me and stretch me and help me to grow, and that's sort of one of the things to which I anchor my life, that notion of always growing and always changing and always being better than I was yesterday. And that quote from whoever the hell Corey Lyles is, you know, evokes that in me.
Oh, Corey Lyles.
Yeah.
Oh, the KKK wizard.
Is that any relation to the Corey Feldman?
That's yeah, not in China, Will. That's just, not how names work.
It's just like how Tom Hanks and Tom Cruise are actually brothers.
Well, they are, right? Did you guys hear
they're twins?
Did you guys hear that rumor that Tom Cruise gave up Scientology?
Guys, did you hear that Danny DeVito and Rhea Perlman got divorced? This is true.
Did you hear that Danny DeVito married Tom Cruise?
Shut up. That's not true. That's not true. That's not true.
Tom Cruise gave up Scientology for Danny DeVito?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm on Twitter right now, guys. I'm letting everyone know. They'll take it as truth.
Oh, and the quotation that whenever I think, you know, quotation that I want to remember is, at the risk of being cliche, I'm actually really pleased that this might be entering the realm of cliche. It's a Vonnegut quote.
Nice.
From God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater, which is a weird and amazing book. And it's, hello, babies. Welcome to Earth. It's hot in the summer and cold in the winter. It's round and wet and crowded. At the outside, babies, you've got about 100 years here. There's only one rule that I know of, babies. God damn it, you've got to be kind.
I thought that your quote was going to be at the risk of being cliche.
You know, that's another good one. That was said by Corey Lyles in his second book.
I see.
Yeah, and so I've often sort of tried to figure out, you know, what the center is of what I believe or whatever. And I really feel like when it comes right down to it, all I really care about is kindness. And I feel like that really summarizes it in a way that is very beautiful and trenchant to me.
I like it too.
Jeremy, do you feel like, so is that something that you like constantly struggle with then?
Being kind?
Yeah.
Well, it's something I feel like it's not so much a struggle as it is a data point or something that I'm always trying to think about. Yeah. You know, my sort of working mantra for existence in the world is that I never want anybody's day to be worse because I was in it.
Okay.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah, great job with that.
Sorry, I know I ruined your day. But to be fair, I didn't know the cat was there. yeah, so you know, it's always making sure that, and it's sort of also, you know, the other quotation that I would pull is the entirety of David Foster Wallace's commencement speech at Kenyon College.
It's a hell of a quote.
Which you can read published in proverb form as a book called This Is Water. But his reminder that that every time you interact with somebody, remember that they're trying their best, that they're doing the best they can at that moment. And so it's, you know, always trying to be compassionate. And it's only rarely a struggle. Sometimes in my previous job, when I was in a customer service position, it was a little bit more of a struggle.
Mm-hmm.
Because there were just so many of them in a row. And the 19th person that is doing the best they can but is still being an enormous dick, it gets a little bit harder. But I feel like most of the time it's not a struggle.
But Dave, do you honestly believe that? Do you honestly believe that people are always doing their best?
I believe for the most part everyone is doing their best. I believe there are very, very, very few people in very, very rare instances that are actually trying to cause harm or to hurt other people.
Wow.
I think that's very, very optimistic. And I think that's a great thing to walk around with. I don't think that people are always doing their best. I want to believe that to be true, but I actually think that people are often not doing their best. They're just doing okay, or they're just doing what they have to do to get by. I'd like to believe that people are doing their best, but
my head would explode if I found out that most people weren't actively doing their worst.
Well, let me tell you. I
would. I want to frame that question differently to everybody. Do you think? Okay, so I've been applying to jobs because I'm unemployed, but I had to do this like online sort of like personality survey thing. Ooh. to get my application through to HR. And one
and
of the
now
questions.
You're recording this podcast from prison.
Yes. Oh yeah. By the way. Oh shit! I lied about that one on the application. No. One of the questions was, you know, if given the chance, do you think that people generally try to do what's right or will do what's right?
If given the chance, what does that mean? Or what did you take what did you take that to mean?
I put down undecided.
Of course. I wouldn't know where to begin with that question.
That's a ridiculous question because you don't know everybody on the planet.
Well, sure. But I mean, you know, it's also ridiculous for me to answer honestly in a job application.
Of course. Of course.
I was dishonest about that answer also.
Can you ask that a question again? Can you ask the question on the questionnaire? What did it say?
It said, do you believe that if given the chance, people will do what's right?
Oh, God. That is such a slippery question. I mean...
Right?
All those words, all those, like, given the chance, people, who are people, do what's right, what's right.
Oh, shit's like the Second Amendment.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man. I'm glad I didn't have to fill out that application. I mean, I am unemployed. I just haven't been filling out applications.
Huh, I too am unemployed. Gerald, what are you spending your days doing?
Yeah, talk to me. Talk to me about like your 11 a.m. to about midnight. That's generally when I'm awake. What are you doing during those hours?
TCB.
At 11 a.m. he's getting lunch.
Yeah.
Okay. Synergy.
First lunch or second lunch?
What are your takeaways?
Key performance indicators. Okay. KPIs, as we say in the biz.
How's your ROI?
That's pronounced wah, Owen. Wah.
It's
king.
It's TTR. ROI is king. TTR through the roof.
How's your BPH?
How's your BPM?
That's what I meant. Now BPM? I want to know how many in an hour.
What are we talking
Heartbeats,
about?
Heartbeats, I guess.
Oh, BPM. I don't know. I hit the treadmill every day, so I think it's pretty low.
Wait, right, it's like on par with your BMI, basically?
Yeah, my BMI is...
How are your BMs?
My BMI is through the floor.
And by BMs, he means Bloody Marys. How are your Bloody Marys?
Oh, so you've been to a working lunch at my office?
Yes!
Working lunch.
Okay, I don't want to...
I'm really uncomfortable right now.
We should probably come back to this. We should move on, but just a quick poll. I want to ask this question. If given the chance, do you think that people will do what's right? Gerald?
No.
Owen?
Undecided.
Will?
It's an impossible question.
And I say yes. Okay.
There we are. That's why you're listening to the four of us.
I think given the chance, people will do what's self-serving.
And that's sort of where I come down, and I think.
And whether or not that's the thing that's right is up in the air.
I think this should be an entire hour-long podcast.
I think so too.
Other than me will skip.
I'll read the selfish gene before next week.
I look forward to it.
Yeah, real talk,
Gerald.
All right. So we've all heard the phrase: "It's the little things that make life worth living. It's the little things that mean the most." There's lots of variations on this phrase. So. And I logically take that to mean that there are a lot of seemingly insignificant things that happen, and people derive a disproportionate sense of satisfaction from those things, ultimately for no good reason. So, like, man brings his wife flowers, she has the best day of her life, you know, someone holds a sleeping baby and they're filled with unbridled joy. People lose their goddamn minds over just a glimpse of an adorable puppy.
Or Tim Tebow.
Or Tim Tebow, yeah.
Oh my God. My mind is lost. Sorry.
Old people finding a quarter on the sidewalk and, you know, like popping and locking like they won the lottery.
That would bring joy to my day if I saw that.
So, but for me, the little things tend to be the things for which I have a disproportionately angry reaction relative to their actual significance in the world. So, like, there's a lot going on in the world. There's a presidential election coming up. There's, you know, there's unrest all over the world. People are doing evil things. And there are tiny, tiny, insignificant things that piss me off to no end. And so I want to itemize a few of the ones that really get to me the most, and then turn it over to you guys and get your view. So some of the things are the giant rat, the giant inflatable rat. We all know what I'm talking about. Whenever there's a labor dispute, and you know I ride for labor. I'm always down with labor. Like I'm borderline Marxist in this regard. Like I always want. I don't care if it's like, you know, the subway urinators union is on strike. I want them back on the job and peeing on the stairwell. Like, but that goddamn rat
for $30 an hour.
Yes, exactly. Well, my tax dollars going to that. But that rat, like the rat, pisses me off. And so the whole flavor of these things about which I get irrationally pissed off is that I don't know the origin of it. I don't know why I get so pissed off. But I think for this one, it's the fact that I'm pretty sure there's only one rat and there's one guy that just rents it out and that's his full-time job. And that just bothers me that he's capitalizing on the lack of creativity of protesters everywhere. Another one is...
Can I interrupt you for just one second here? Yeah. This is a total tangent, but during our cross-country road trip, Will and I saw a play in Stratford, Ontario.
Oh, my God.
It was a Shakespeare play called Cymbeline. And at some point, I believe Zeus comes down to lecture the people on stage. And we were sitting... It was a thrust stage, and we were far on one side. So we had a sort of, I don't know, oblique view of the stage. And it looked to all the world, to both of us, like Zeus came out riding one of those giant inflatable rats.
It looked so much like a fucking rat.
And about 1 minute into his 3-minute speech, I sort of was able to, I don't know, move my perspective to the left and be like, oh, I think he might be riding an eagle. And what I think is its nose is actually an eye. And what I think is an arm is actually maybe it's a leg and those are wings. And I figured out, oh, he's riding an eagle on a mount. But really, it looked to all the world like he was riding one of those inflatable rats. And the play ended, and the first thing Will said was like, that was pretty good. Why was Zeus riding a rat?
Just for reference, I mean, for people who don't know what we're talking about, the giant inflatable rat is something that you see around... It's on a given subway sidewalk in New York, in front of whatever Best Buy or, you know, like hotel is on strike, effectively symbolizing the fact that management is a group of rats, or the manager is one big rat, or whatever.
Well, there doesn't even have to be a picket line. It's just any place that's sort of being established as hiring non-union workers when the union you know, ostensibly has jurisdiction over that specific type of industry.
Right. And there's usually like two or three guys in overalls handing out, you know, like light blue photo
fat men
or something. But anyway, the rat pisses me off when I see it. Okay. Another one is people with too many bumper stickers. Like, even if it's shit that I agree with, you know, it's like Jill Stein for president. I'm like, why are you advertising the fact that you're a big supporter of Jill Stein and you like the Yankees? Like, stop it. Just again, irrationally bothers me. Another one is living museums.
What is a living museum?
So yeah, I'll tell you. So when I was in eighth grade, we went on this school field trip to Old Sturbridge Village in Sturbridge, Massachusetts.
Oh, yeah.
It depicts life in the late 18th to early 19th centuries, and they've got all these buildings with people in period dress, and the people are actually pretending that it's that year.
I love that shit. Did you guys see when Oprah did the back in time thing and she went back to the 1600s?
No, I didn't. No.
Did you see the one where Conan O'Brien went to historic Williamsburg or Old Bethpage?
No.
Okay.
I did see that one, Ellen. I think we watched that together.
Oh, yeah.
This is like colonialism.
We'll link to those.
Old Sturbridge Village in particular pissed me off. I remember when I was 14, we went on this field trip, Mr. Mohor, the teacher, is like guiding us through the general store. And
sorry, what was his name?
Mr. Mohor.
Okay.
Shout out to Mr. Mohor. I think he died.
Sorry.
I'm not. Yeah, me too.
Did he die on this trip?
Nah.
Okay.
He died on another. He didn't die on another trip, but he was. Yeah, it was.
Anyway, move on.
Say about that other trip. Sometimes.
Jesus Christ.
She got dark. So he's shepherding us through the general store, and there's this old woman behind the counter, and she's talking about how it's like 1798, and the moment that the switch flipped for me was when somebody took a picture, a flash photograph, and she said, "Oh, lightning! There must be a storm." And like, oh, for Christ. Whatever reason, that just set me off, and I was biting the inside of my cheek, and then she starts talking about like. How it's so nice that these young people are here, but why aren't they at school at the Little Red Schoolhouse? And so I reached my point where I said, we're not children, we're just grown people that are really small because of malnutrition in 1798. And then she turned around and she's like, that's nonsense. People in 1798 eat fresh vegetables and they grow up strong. And I was like, no, bitch. Medicine and disinfectant make people grow up strong and not get dysentery. And Mr. Mohor hit me with a forearm shiver and pushed me out the door. But still, like I'm mad thinking about it just now. One last thing, that little small thing that got me pissed off, and I think this may be a byproduct of how I spend my days, like we talked about at my job. There's a television in the office, and I was walking through the room with the television, and CNN was playing, and I just saw the little bottom line thing on it, and it said, "Rap music helps young boy overcome stutter." And I was just walking through on my way to a meeting, and the immediate thought that came to my head was, fuck that kid, I hope his dog dies.
Damn.
And then I kept it moving. And I was like, that is some evil shit. Why would I think that? Why did that get me so mad? But, you know, it's the little things.
Why did that make you so
mad? I don't know. None of these things, I've not examined any of these things to understand why I got so irrationally mad. But, like, this kid's got a stutter. I don't even know if he has a dog. But
wait,
just...
what's the topic? Are
you
we talking about...
And you said that... So, okay. So, one, you were forced to go to a living museum as a school child. I can see how that would be annoying because you were forced to do something you didn't want to do. Too many bumper stickers. You're extrapolating that to mean this person is going to be pedantic like the woman at the fucking Thai restaurant telling you what pho is. You had three, which is the giant rat, which is that those people get in your way as you're trying to walk around. Four is a kid who overcame a stutter by listening to music. This is not like the other three.
No, he wasn't. I don't think he was listening to music. I think he was a rapper. He was a young boy.
Either way, this is
music helped him. Music helped.
He had a tie-dye shirt on and he was spitting rhymes and not stuttering.
Good for him.
Why is that bad? Why is any of that bad?
None of this is bad. None of these things are bad. I just it's the little things that make me angry.
So was it the way that the story was reported?
No, it's literally, I read those, like, whatever, eight words, kept it moving, and the thought in my head was, I don't like this child, and I hope that he suffers. Like, it wasn't that complex. Like, and that's the thing I want to put on you guys, like, do you have things that make you angry like that, that are irrational and momentary like that?
Oh, gosh.
Oh man!
I mean, so it's certainly possible that I'm the angriest man in the world, and that this is just me.
I can't say that anything that makes me angry is irrational. I feel like I'm quite rational, but there are times where I get very angry, and I have to remind myself, like, hey, why walk around with all that anger? Just let it go.
So you're telling me to turn that frown upside down?
That's exactly what I'm doing. Because, like, what you are, Geralt.
Thanks,
you're,
babe.
You're a candle.
Thanks, babe.
You are a light.
You're a lumen.
So what I'm saying is whatever you have within you, that whatever makes you glow, you're going to give to other people. So
wax
you can
and heat.
You can choose to be like the city on top of a hill. You can choose to be a glowing beacon of hope. Or you can choose to be full of rage. And I'm saying I do experience... rage, but I try to remind myself of being more candle-like.
Well, what the fuck are you talking about?
He's taking us on a metaphor tour.
I'm sorry. I took some mescaline immediately before this podcast.
To deal with your bee sting?
That wasn't even coherent enough to be a mixed metaphor.
What is it? Where are we? What is this? No, nothing makes me angry. I take a lot of drugs.
There you go, and I don't. Maybe that's
Owen,
my thing.
More drugs, please. Does anything irrational make you angry?
I feel I don't think so. I think that big things make me angry. Like, big things in the world make me... shit that I don't have control over makes me very angry.
Blue whales piss you right off.
Large, yeah. Physically large things.
Why are those whales so big?
God damn.
Nobody needs a whale that big.
We should just murder them until they're extinct.
That's a great idea.
Like the megafauna.
Oh, man.
Yeah, no, but like, but large things make me. Large things are completely out of my control. Big world things that are out of my control, like things like the internet, like the fact that the internet and the 24-hour news cycle have fucked political discourse. That makes me angry, like on a moment-to-moment basis, which is pretty unhealthy.
Yeah, I think I pick my battles. I like to engage.
You want this kid with a stutter who overcame it with rap music.
Yeah, I don't want to take on the internet.
Fight, my money's on Gerald.
Gerald.
Between the 13-year-old stutter.
Yeah.
I am.
You know what? I hate Justin Bieber. Fuck that guy.
There we go.
For no reason. Fucking plenty
of
good reasons. He's a fucking dumbass.
Owen, don't Justin give him reasons. You don't need reasons. This whole thing is about irrational hate. You don't need a reason.
No, but that's the problem. The problem is that I justify my irrational hate after the fact.
Oh, well, then I got nothing for you. Be the candle on the hill.
That kid is a vacuous dipshit, and he shouldn't be foisted into my awareness.
He yawned in Katie Couric's face.
Yeah, he's a piece of shit.
I got stuck in a YouTube K-hole, and I found a clip where Katie Couric was interviewing him, and he just flat out yawned in her face, and she was very polite. She's like, "Oh, I'm sorry, am I boring you?" And she's like, "No, I just didn't sleep well."
You know what that kid needs? He needs to have his pants pulled down and be spanked on the bottom by a nun.
No! You said you weren't into that.
No, he's of age, isn't he? Isn't he of age?
Will, stop that.
And that I makes no. If he's of age, that makes it worse.
Be the
that,
candle on the hill.
That the
okay. I'm what I mean to say is. He needs to get mugged.
And Owen, we come Owen, back Owen, to Kitty Porn just, where we began.
Just say you want his dog to die.
I will say...
Yeah, that's much better. I want everything he loves to vanish.
The insignificant shit that makes me angry is people who write LOL on the internet.
How about YOLO?
I love that shit. Do you know fucking... what's his name? Zac Efron has YOLO tattooed on the side of his hand, just below his pinky.
Is that Dreamboat Zac Efron you're talking about?
No, this is older Zac Efron. Oh,
he was in the Notebook 2 or whatever that was called, the second Notebook picture.
Wasn't he in all of the High School Musical movies?
That's the one. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
The one, and he used to have Bieber hair. He had Bieber hair before Bieber had hair.
He had Bieber hair before Bieber had hair.
Yeah, before Bieber was even like around.
Thank Bieber, you for Bieber, listening Bieber, to the Bieber, Bieber, Bieber. Pocket Podcast. I'm Dave. For Gerald, Will, and Owen, we'd like to wish you all a good night. And now, Will will present his favorite celebrity baby names.
Can what you say is cut? Okay, what you're gonna say is, and now Will, as Owen O'Malley, reporting from the Midwest, his top five favorite celebrity baby names.
Guys, I'm not really developing a Midwest accent, am I?
No. Okay here we go. And now, Will, in some sort of performance art, is going to pretend to be Owen O'Malley as a Midwestern man reporting on his favorite celebrity baby names. Will, take it away.
Okay, that's not how I would have worded it, but that's okay. Hey, folks, Owen O'Malley here. I'm thinking about maybe growing up in a little bit and maybe settling down with a nice lady, and I've been thinking about, oh, gee, what kind of names would I name my kids? So, like many of you... I've turned to the celebrities for a clue as to how to live my life. Okay, so top five celebrity baby names. Coming in at number five, and this one is from Natalie Portman, who's quite nice for being from Israel. Aleph. Her name is... The baby's name would be Aleph, and I didn't do much reading. I don't know if that's a boy or girl.
Jesus, is that really her baby's name?
It's... Yes, it is.
Aleph?
Number
Are you
two,
fucking kidding me?
That's what you have an issue with, not the Midwestern leprechaun that's talking right now.
No, I'm deriving much joy from that.
Your time speaking is done. Number
well, the
two,
fact that he basically accused you of being an anti-Semite.
Aleph is just the fucking first letter in the Hebrew
two,
alphabet. That is some lazy shit. Sorry,
number
keep
two,
going.
I'm sorry. Okay, a little bit of a train wreck there. I'm sorry, folks. Number two is from Peter Wentz. I believe he's in some sort of rock and roll band. He named his baby Bronx.
Oh, Christ.
Oh, I'm sorry. That wasn't two. That was four. It's the second on my list, but it's number four. All right, number three. This one's a tie, and this is coming from one of my favorite singers, Ms. Mariah Carey. The name could be Monroe or Moroccan.
Cool.
Wait, what?
She has twins, and their names are Monroe and Moroccan, like the country in North Africa.
But like the adjective Moroccan, like someone from Morocco?
Yeah, like if I have a baby and it's looking a little tan, maybe I'll call it Moroccan.
So what's your name? Moroccan. Sure, but what is it?
At number two, this is from Jason Lee. You know him from all those movies. He named his baby Inspector, but with a K. Like Inspector Gadget, but with a K.
Like Inspector Deck?
And coming in at number one, this is the one that I'm really holding out for. I hope my special lady really likes this one. This one is coming from Jessica Alba. And that baby's name is Honor.
Honor. Hey, I've got a cousin named Honor.
Are you serious, Owen O'Malley, number two?
Yeah, and Honor was my great-grandmother's name, from Ireland.
Oh, fuck.
How do you feel now, Will?
That's a fucking stupid name. I'm sorry.
Whoa, dude.
Shit just got real.
Will, it's a good thing that you're two time zones away.
Good night.
I'd fight for my family's honor right now. Oh, shit.